to have a heterogeneous population with a range of problems and a range of severities, and they're becoming overloaded now with children, you know, with more severe needs. The gang situation clearly has placed great stress on the alternative programs. In addition, even if these programs did serve more people from this more severely disturbed population, the less severe then would not be served, and they're the ones who probably we have the most hope about and who prevention can still work. In speaking with Portland administrators about this, they clearly say that there simply are not enough slots to serve this population, and there are not enough specialized choices which would be beneficial to the young people, leading to some change in behavior. What is needed is something that offers 24-hour supervision and assistance. This bill appears to offer that. Also, it has obvious implications in terms of the school safety, as I spoke on earlier. In closing, at the present time, the needs of the two distinct populations are not being met. The help that's needed for the juvenile offender in order to cause a decrease in criminal behavior is not available, and the young people, the victims who are in a school attempting to achieve an education, are in a vulnerable position in terms of safety. These bills present positive steps in responding to this dilemma. Thank you for this opportunity to testify on this issue. Any questions?
Thank you. Well, I would like to question you sometime on 356, and we'll call and do that, because I don't think you're, I'm not satisfied with your testimony on that.
Okay.
To say that that's the answer to how we do it.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, my name is Muriel Goldman. I would like to invite two people from Multnomah County Juvenile Division to join me if you have some technical questions that I may not be able to respond to. Bill Morris and Jim Anderson. Mr. Anderson is a supervisor for juvenile detention, and Mr. Morris is supervisor for adjudicatory and dependency services. I'm here representing the Multnomah County Juvenile Court Advisory Council. I chair its legislation committee, and legislation is one of the activities that the council gets involved in and has been for several years. I've also, as you know, been involved in juvenile justice issues for many, many years. If you don't mind, I would also like to be able to respond to both 562 and 356 because they have to be back at the court and I have to be back in Portland. Would that be possible for me to speak to both bills, starting with 562?
Get started on the first one. We'll see whether you're
okay.
How long it takes you to finish
not
with
very
the second
long.
One.
I have a brief statement. Starting with Senate Bill 562, we do support this legislation for the same reasons that you've heard. We support the amendments on having the same standards for judging prior to adjudication on the merits for least restrictive alternative as well as danger to the community. We also support deleting the runaways from another county. And we have another suggestion. We would like to restore the language that had a 5-day limit on holding a youth who has violated conditions of release. Apparently that has also been removed from the proposed legislation. So we'd like you to take a look at that. And in general, we think it's not clear what kind of standards there are for how long you can hold a youth in pre-adjudicatory detention other than the 10-day review. So I'd like you to take that into consideration. What I want to do is bring to your attention the potential for increased costs. Currently, in Multnomah County, both the boys' units, there are two, and the girls' unit are operating at maximum staff coverage. If even two or three youth are added to either the girls' unit or the second boys' unit, it would require double coverage. And as I learned today from Mr. Anderson, actually they have triple coverage in the boys' unit because they've had some incidents in there. What that means, if they had to have double coverage in each of the boys' unit and the girls' unit, that would cost $250,000 a year, and that is only for operating. That would not pay for any additional program costs. The current juvenile detention standards require that if a youth is held more than 5 days, you have to provide education, you have to provide non-dispositional counseling, you have to provide physical exercise and recreation. So there is the potential for considerable additional costs. So I want to bring that to your attention. We feel, although we support the bill, we think that that if there's going to be this tendency to increase the number of youth who are held in detention both before and after, that I think the state's going to have to look at providing the funds, because most of the counties are unable to do it. And if they do it, what it's going to do is take away limited resources that could be used for programming outside of detention, which we happen to feel is very important. Do you have any questions about 562? Otherwise, I'd like to go on to 356.
Well, I would ask the folks that are at the table that you brought with you to talk about administration of the sort of pre-adjudication part of it, give you a chance to comment. Okay. What's a reasonable time to expect they would stay pre-adjudication? I'm looking at I'd like a front-end limit on that. I know it's going to crunch the juvenile courts, maybe, but I'm interested in what's a reasonable time we expect kids to stay in this sort of pre-adjudicated stage here, and what kind of conditions and standards are we going to keep them?
It's good that you asked me that this week, because Monday the court imposed court rules on us, and they're rules that have been in place for some time, but they are becoming, we're going to crack down on them now, that there is a 28-day period before we have a court hearing on a child in custody, that we have a 28-day limit. Now, that doesn't preclude the fact that a defense attorney or district attorney could ask for a continuance, but it is bringing the child to the court's attention within 28 days, and there'll have to be some good cause for them to be in detention beyond that.
So the idea that the number that came to my mind was 30 days, and I guess your idea about some for good cause extending that probably is a reasonable.
If the attorneys can't get their case to court in that period of time, that would be the only reason.
I'm not sure if that's overworked attorneys, not necessarily a reason to have somebody locked up until before they've been judged to be guilty, in my opinion. But that's a personal opinion right now, and I won't take the time to deal with that.
I'm curious, I mean, that is a uniform trial for a rule.
I know it's a trial court rule. It'd be nice to have a statutory rule. Do you have anything else you would like to comment on? Either of the bills, just let us know what the conditions are out there that you're dealing with.
Well, I think the...
And we need your name for the record.
Excuse me, my name's Jim Anderson. I'm the detention superintendent at Multnomah County. I think, obviously, the change in although we much appreciate the simplification and the obvious need to be able to better interpret the statute relative to who we can and who we cannot detain, I think it does broaden the net, and I think, as Muriel has pointed out, there is a cost involved. And again, just to reemphasize that we're operating at the top end of our capacity right now, and any increase in either the length of stay or the number of kids that we are holding will require more staff. Our average length of stay for the calendar year 88 was 4.86 days, which is up 1.4 days in the last 4 years. So although the number of kids we hold is basically the same, because of the increase in length of stay, our daily population is up 40%. And
the average length of stay increased how much?
1.4 days over a three-year period.
Okay. Why do you think that's so?
Well, a part of it is more difficulty in finding placements. Community resources have not kept pace with problems that have been identified either through because of the gain experiences we're having, or resources have not developed at the rate the problems have. Court time is has been extended over this same time frame. Talking to a counselor yesterday, was looking at a 2-month wait for a 15-minute hearing, and all of these.
That's the thing that really bothers me. So we have a 2-month wait for a 15-minute hearing, and we period at a 15-minute hearing, and we keep a kid locked up for two months.
This was not an in-custody case, but that just, that's just...
Okay, but we're, okay, we got him out in some kind of program, Janus or one of the private nonprofits. There was a time when then the private nonprofits came to me about a year and a half ago and said that because of your inability to kind of get people out of your system into their system, they had empty beds. Could you respond to that?
Any empty beds that are available in any resource in our state are not available to the kids that we're dealing with in custody. The kids that we have that we're having difficulty with have been gone through screening, they've gone through rapid access, they've gone through all the channels that are open pre-commitment to make them available for any resources that are available in the community.
You're talking about now post-adjudicated kids?
Well, there's primarily a process that you go through prior to adjudication to, if you're recommending an out-of-home placement, short of a hard bed at McLaren, where you see what's available. If you're recommending an out-of-home placement, if you don't have a place for the kid to go, either you can have the adjudication, he can wait in detention while you find a placement, or you can find that out before you have the hearing. At this point, we put all kids through rapid access and try to find a placement before we have the hearing. So,
would it help to do some residential drug treatment programs for the kind of kids you're talking about now?
Some of them, it very much would. We have kids now that need a secure drug and alcohol program, and you have to affect a commitment to get them in a secure drug and alcohol program, treatment program through McLaren, the Corvallis House.
So you have to commit them to McLaren before you can get them into a secure drug and alcohol treatment program
in
the way the world works today for these kind of kids.
Unless they go to a private hospital, and they have to have a lot of money to do that, or insurance.
And insurance is run about 30 days, so unless it's a program that they can complete in 30 days, that's when most insurance is run out.
How much money could you, what would it take to kind of give some private nonprofits some incentives to expand programs that you know are useful and that are secure and that work, that have some rate of effectiveness? Could you gather together some of that information for us and bring it back to us?
There is probably that information available right now. I don't have access. I don't have access to it in that I concentrate pretty much on detention issues, but I could.
We'll get Muriel and the group that you're working with. It would be real helpful for us to find out what we hear on the adult system, that people who want to get into a probationary situation or a diversion situation have to wait 6 months if they're addicted and want to go into a residential structured program, and I'm hearing the same thing about juveniles. I think that probably resources are even less for juveniles from what I hear, and I guess I need some what you think you can deal with.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there are two programs currently available for seriously delinquent and addicted youth. One is through commitment and the program at McLaren, and the other is Morrison Center's Adolescent Day Treatment Program for Alcohol and Drug.
We have two options for kids.
Yeah,
you send them to McLaren,
but the one in the community, that's the only one. It serves kids statewide. That's Morrison Center, and they're limited to 10 or 12 youth for the entire state. Now, they are day treatment, and then rather they were residential for a while, and then they decided that it was more effective, and they reduced the runaway rate by having proctor parents, you know, a one-on-one relationship, and apparently they're quite successful with that.
The only thing we can afford is 10 or 12 kids with the kind of problem we hear out here in the Morrison Center. I mean, that's really criminal. If we're going to talk about what's criminal, that to me seems like
now, they contract criminal with Children's Services Division for that program. If you like and would like the information, I can gather, you know, their statistics and have someone from McLaren provide you with statistics on their program.
What it would take to expand that center. Anything else? Great. Thank you very much, Marion. Thank you. Thank you both for coming. Interesting. Oh, your other bill.
Yes, okay. I appreciate your doing this, because if you're going to carry that bill over, I'm going to be gone for two weeks, and I may not be able to testify. We feel the Senate Bill 356, I keep getting the two mixed up, is a much more complex bill than 562, in that it adds graduated lengths of time that you can hold an offender for post-adjudicatory detention based on the seriousness of the crime. It not only has implications for considerable increased detention costs beyond what we talked about for pre-adjudicatory, but it changes the state policy and how we deal with juvenile offenders by having these graduated terms based on the seriousness of the offense. And it has a serious potential for using up limited resources for hard beds and leaving little for alternative community programming to keep youth from committing more serious crimes, and also for serving them once they get out. Even if you hold them for, say, 60 days for A felonies, that's not going to do it. They're going to need services afterwards. And if all the money goes to hard beds, whether it's at the state level or the local level, we fear that we're going to get into the same situation that we now have with adults, where we didn't plan far enough in advance, and we have no more money left for community alternatives because we're putting them into hard beds. We're opposed to any extension of post-adjudicatory detention beyond 30 days for felonies, regardless of the seriousness of the felony. There may be situations where the current 8-day minimum is inadequate for the kinds of serious offenses that are sometimes coming to the attention of the courts. But we're opposed to it going beyond that if the youth's behavior is so difficult or so dangerous to the community and longer incarceration is necessary, then we feel that the training school is the appropriate place for those youth, that it not be the local detention facility that holds them beyond the 30 days. I don't know how the others who are going to be testifying after me feel about this one, but we also feel that the current up to 8-day limit should be retained for misdemeanors and as backup secure space for community agencies when it's appropriate for those agencies to use that space. And you will hear from those people later. It's difficult to predict what the exact financial impact of increasing the ability to hold youth will have on current detention facilities. Only Multnomah and Lane have the physical capacity to expand their units. In Multnomah, if they open another unit, just the operational cost would be $350,000 a year. This is for post-adjudicatory. You've already heard what the potential is for pre-adjudicatory. This does not include the cost of the necessary program component, the educational cost to the ESD for additional teachers, another counselor, increased medical coverage, and any other services that would be required if necessary if the youth were being held even for 30 days. And although it says up to 30 days, obviously the push for increasing it is very likely that the maximum would become the minimum just because the space is there. So we support, if it is going to be increased, we support it up to 30 days for felonies, but no more than that. And we feel that if a county is going to use the 30-day option, that they should file a plan with the state, and you could designate which body that would be, that programs would be available for youth who stayed longer than 8 days. And that possibly the standards for such programming, if the present statute isn't adequate, should be set by the Juvenile Services Commission, because they're already responsible for developing standards for the use of juvenile detention. And as in the earlier bill, 562, we believe that the state should provide the funds for operating the additional detention space and for paying for the programs in detention that would be required by passing this bill. Happy to answer any questions.
Great, thank you, Muriel. Either of you would like to comment on this last bill as well?
No.
It's just, I think the impacts are probably pretty much what you're talking about.
Okay. Philosophically, I'd just like to say that I think that probably this is a venture into a different kind of juvenile justice system than we've had in the past, that we are talking about a more punitive system here than we've ever had. but I don't have...
You're talking about the up to 30 days or beyond 30 days?
Either.
Either. Okay.
Madam Chair...
Could I ask... Well, I suppose the courts will make that decision to some degree, how much punitive, how much, who's going to make the decision rather than the intake officer about who gets in for how long and that kind of situation. So I guess that's not a fair question of you. Muriel.
Okay. I just wanted to say that Paul Snyder, representing the AOC, who has signed up to testify in both bills, had to leave for another hearing, and he left this for me to enter into the record.
Right. We'll have another time for the people who
well,
come
just turn
on,
it in
on 356, and we'll catch him.
Yeah.
Then,
he registered some of the same concerns that we brought to your attention today. Thank you very much.
Thanks. We have, great, Pat Callahan is here still. Is Pat still here?
Yes.
Yeah, I want to take you on this last bill, and then we have Len Monks from the Children's Division. Paul, come back another day. Well, I suppose we should, but I suppose we have we missed the deadline, so can we do it Monday? We have a bill introduction that we're sort of talking here for a minute, and we just lost Jim, so I'm sort of wondering whether we could wait for a moment.
Let the three of us do it?
Right. The three of us could do it. Are there any? Go ahead, Pat.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'll try to be extremely brief. Generally, on behalf of the Oregon District Attorneys Association, we support Senate Bill 562. I have given to your aide for distribution two proposed amendments. I would indicate the first one won't require, I don't think, any discussion in that it includes the recommendations made by Judge Harrell, and that is on line 11, actually line 11 through 13, essentially to replace that language with the simple provision, any felony crime against person or property. I note that the gentleman from Yamhill County suggested any felony crime as defined in Chapter 163 or 164, I would oppose that language because it leaves out certain key felony offenses. For instance, in Chapter 167, promoting prostitution, Chapter 166, intimidation in the first degree. So I think that the simple language, any felony crime against person or property, which was also suggested by Judge Harrell, would be the appropriate language, and I have put that in written form.
So that's your preference then?
Yes, I think that would be more appropriate. The second suggested amendment I'll just address briefly. It is one that I brought up that I think is it's a timekeeping matter. Well, on page 2, line 29, we're talking about the judicial review of detention status every 10 days. The current language says that any child ordered detained under this section shall have a review hearing at least every 10 days. That's the current statute, and Judge Harrell's bill retains that. I would suggest that the committee delete the word shall and interject the may upon the request of any party, making it permissive at the request of any party to have the review hearing, rather than making it mandatory every 10 days. So at least every 10 days, it could be brought up upon motion of any party. The cases I'm seriously...
How many lawyers are you going to have? How many defense lawyers, since we don't give these kids defense lawyers, how many lawyers are we going to ask to kind of make sure that the 10 days are running so that they get noticed on their side?
Well, Madam Chair, first of all, I would indicate that I'm sure the Indigent Defense Fund would say that these kids are getting lawyers. And as to how many of them will raise it, I would like to think, and I can't get in their minds, but I would like to think that if there is a serious change in the child's circumstance, which those people would then believe would allow for the child to be released, then they would bring that to the attention of the court. This just makes it permissive rather than mandatory, and what I'm looking to do is to avoid a needless expenditure of time for a mandatory 10-day review when there's been no change of circumstances. And I'd be happy to entertain any questions of the panel.
other questions? I think that we'll take this under advisement. We'll probably get back to you and see what we think about this.
Thank you. And I do have comments on 356, but I'll wait.
Good, yeah. We'll have some more amendments and we'll Lynn, do you want to come and just give us a wind-up 562, and then we can get you back on the other one? Appreciate that. And then I think we have exhausted the witness list for 562, and we'll continue.
I'm Lynn Monks, Assistant Administrator, Children's Services Division. And the reason I can be quick is because we participate in the Juvenile Justice Coalition with Juvenile Services Commission and the judges and juvenile department directors who you've heard from. And I simply want to reiterate in summary that we support the amendments that they've offered to you today. We feel that the list of offenses in Section 1 are reasonable and of those that present a particular risk to public safety. The one additional issue that we would like to surface is new from the testimony you've heard before, is that the present bill language should probably be strengthened to require that if youngsters are going to be held any length of time in detention living units, that they have in place educational, medical, and counseling programming, which could be written against the American Correction Standards. It's really important for those youth. Yeah.
Good, thank you. So we will have something to that effect drafted. And
we do have a proposed amendment to that effect that was suggested by Mr. Fuchs.
Okay, great.
Thank you very much. And 562 is not going to have an impact on you, but we'd like to call you back and talk about the other one much more in detail, I think.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Anything else to come before us today? Thank you, members, for staying. Thank you for the patience, folks out there. We need to kind of be excused to have lunch.